Greetings. Things seem to be happening, and so I anticipate radical changes in this week or next. But let me preface that with, yesterday I sent a postcard to Render Keynes. Today I sent a postcard to Chris Bitterman. Basically, I wrote the same thing on both cards. Yet more, I'll run scared and refuse to engage beyond the Bible is true and the institutional church is a fraud. It is a big question. Did you live your life in obedience to Christ or the traditions of men? And, you know, obviously you could get that and you can be really offended if you wanted. Or you could see a man trying to act in love, which my content it is the latter. Because, you know, you think, oh, a person lives his life trying to serve the Lord by being a pastor in a church. Again, where's it called for? Where's the institutional church called for? You know, anyway, but rather than go down that, because, you know, I thought about it, and you know, the obvious question would be, well, you don't know what that kind of cost would be for somebody to examine that after they've spent, you know, 20, 30, 40 years doing that. Well, actually, not as a pastor, but yes, I do. I do very much know what it's like to say, this is my life, and have the Lord crush it and show me that's not where you belong. You know, because I've thought about it. You know, the easy thing, when I was dining with the CEO of Atari, I was his guest. You know, him introducing me at this big round table at the top of the Hyatt Regency, and I didn't belong there. In the grace of God, he said, no, this is not the place for you. I didn't know him at the time, but it was very clear after the fact, long after the fact, I didn't belong there at all. It's not the place to be. Definitely not the place to be, especially what the industry's become. But, I mean, right there, literally, millions of dollars, right there at my hands. All I had to do is reach out and grab it. And, you know, I knew I could do it. I had the ability. I mean, they handed me, what I say, is equivalent of $100,000 of cash. So here, go make this. And let's see if we can make millions off of it. Fortunately, it didn't happen. You know, then obviously the politics thing, which clearly I will contend I don't belong. And that's where it really can hurt the pride. You know, I thought about it. I was, you know, when I was at the New York Stock Exchange, you know, yeah, I made a million in the stock market. But, you know, besides doing the selling the hardware to them, I thought about it even at the time. That would have been the ideal time to say, you know, I know how to do the what's called high speed trading. Can I get some connections here? You know, when you're right there, it would be a good time to start a dialogue, because that's the way you make money in the stock market. The high speed trading is a really big profitable, but anyway, that's not for me. No, because I don't want to make money in the manipulation of money. And then, you know, I also think about, because I remember, you know, to be in a situation where you get a phone call and you say, could you be here tomorrow? Not a problem. Get on a plane. I'm in Greensboro, North Carolina. And the following day, I arrived in Vienna, Vienna, Austria, to take a drive then to Czechoslovakia. And it's kind of like to get a phone call like that. Say, we'd like you to be here tomorrow. And, you know, I mean, this is just normal business. And that was what I was doing. I don't do anything like that anymore. But I also know, besides the money aspect, there's an ego aspect to this. And I was crushed. It was crushing. So, you know, that would bring up, obviously, 2 Samuel 7. which makes perfect sense. Because one of the things I was challenged on today is my drive for shofar nexus. My ego, my pride, or is it the Lord's call? And, one of the things we've discussed is, Gideon and the fleece. If I let the fleece out of here, and if you do this, and oh, and you did. Well, I'm not sure. Maybe I got lucky. Well, I'll do it the opposite, and so forth. And, so you say, okay, well, he wasn't as he should have trusted the first time, maybe, but you know. But then I set a fleece out once. That was a rather big deal to me, which I mentioned even today. It was a big deal, so allow me to remind you. Things got a little difficult for me. And I ended up living in a homeless shelter alone. It wasn't what I would call the highlight of my life. And roughly around Christmas time, roughly around the time when I said, okay, here's the razor. I'm setting it aside. I will not use it again. And that was 10 years ago. And I haven't since because I figured, okay, it's pride. And now, of course, the question is, am I pride of it? But having an ugly beard, I don't have to be pride. There's no pride there. But I said, okay, Lord, if shofar nexus is what you want me to do, would you somehow get me $5,000? I thought about that for a moment. I said, no. Make that $10,000. And what sunk in with me after the fact is that I started with five and I said, no, that's insufficient. I need 10. And, things went on. About 2 weeks later, wake up in the morning to a phone call. I used to own, I wanted a short domain name. So I got Heritage Systems North Carolina, abbreviated HSNC.com. And I had that, really didn't use it for much. But one of the things I noticed, if you look at HSNC, N and B are right next to each other on the keyboard. And a lot of people apparently did the typo and would type hsbc.com, the bank. And I think that's why there was an attraction. So, because I used to get emails to HSBC. And I could see where somebody would say, I want those emails. So I get this phone call, and a gentleman says, would you sell me hsnc.com for $10,000? And by the way, I said yes. And within just over an hour, I had $10,000 in cash in my account. And, because I start with five and change it to 10, and then in roughly 2 weeks, I had $10,000 in a rather unusual way in my bank account. It seemed to me like my fleece. I didn't do the flip it over and try it both, but I did the five and 10K. And I wondered, because the issue is I didn't handle myself right after that. I erred. The Lord didn't. I erred. But I stuck with it. And that's 10 years ago. And, the question is it coming back? So there was the fleece question. And there's the other example of Second Samuel 7. Because this is where we have, in the ESV. Now then, King David lived in the house lived in his house, and the Lord had given him rest from all the surrounding enemies. The king said to Nathan the prophet, "See, now I dwell in the house of cedar, but the ark of God dwells in a tent." And Nathan said to the king, "Go, do what all is in your heart, for the Lord is with you." So, because one of the things that was said is that it was in the heart of David to build the temple. No, it was in the heart of Solomon to build the temple. That's what we read later. It was in the heart of Solomon. So, but all that's said here is do that it all is in your heart, for the Lord is with you. It doesn't say what was in his heart. He does say that he's concerned that about the ark of the God dwells in a tent. And that's another thing important. He says the ark of God. And when you go further into the chapter, it's not talking about the ark. It's talking about God. Oh, okay, but anyway, it goes on. But that same night, the word of the Lord came to Nathan. "Go and tell my servant David, thus says the Lord, would you build me a house to dwell in?" Now, it's not a house for the ark. "Would you build me a house to dwell in?" So we're talking different things. "I have not lived in a house since the day I brought up the people out of the land of Egypt, but have been moving about in a tent for my dwelling." And you think, in a tent for your dwelling. And I was thinking about that, you know. Our tent, our bodies. Because we see that later. "And all the places where I've moved with all the people of Israel, did I speak a word with any of the judges of Israel, whom I commanded to shepherd my people Israel, saying, 'Why have you not built me a house of cedar?' Now, therefore, thus you shall say to my servant David, thus says the Lord of hosts, I took you from a pasture, from following the sheep," you know, from a high profile position, "from following sheep, that you should be a prince over my people Israel. And I have been with you wherever you went, and have cut off all your enemies from before you, and I have made your name, made you a great name, like the name of the great ones of the earth. And I will appoint a place for my people Israel and plant them, so that they may dwell in their own place and be distributed no more. And violent men shall afflict them no more as formerly. And from the time I appointed judges over my people Israel, I will give you rest from all your enemies. Moreover, the Lord declares that the Lord will make you a house." So, you know, it's, "You're going to build for me? No. I'm going to do for you," is what the Lord is saying. And, but anyway, there's so many things here. But the important thing, verse 12, "When your days are fulfilled and you lie down with your fathers, I'll raise up for you, for your offspring after you. I will raise up your offspring after you who shall come from your body, and I will establish his kingdom." So first reading, Solomon. No, of course, the word there in the Greek is sperma, your descendants. And it's not Solomon. It's Christ. "He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever." Solomon's kingdom is over, finished, gone. Christ isn't. It's established forever. So, you know, again, that would be the consistent. "I will be to him a father," Christ, the Son of God. "And he shall be to me a son," Christ, the Son of God. But you see, the thing that's odd, when he commits iniquity, "I will discipline him with the rod of man, with stripes of the sons of men. And my steadfast love will not depart for him, as I took it from Saul, whom I put away from before you." So, well, obviously we see the idea of Saul was displaced. But this one, Christ, will not be. But when he commits iniquity, and the issue is, Christ didn't. So what does this mean? When he commits iniquity, I will discipline him with the rod of men. In other words, he will use men to discipline Christ. But for iniquity, our iniquities were laid upon him. He didn't commit iniquity. Our iniquities were laid upon him. And the discipline of men, the beating, the scourging, the spitting, and so forth, the whips, the scourging, and the crucifixion were done by men. But my steadfast love will not depart from him. So, I mean, this, you know, and your house and your kingdom shall be sure forever before me. Your throne shall be established forever. In accordance with all these words, and in accordance with all this vision, Nathan spoke to David. So Nathan spoke the words of God. So when he said, go for it in the beginning, that was Nathan's words. The rest of it were God's words spoken through Nathan. That's extremely important. And so it is interesting to see that because what was in David's heart? Was it to build the temple that Solomon built? Obviously, he prepared the stuff for Solomon to build the temple, but he didn't build the material temple. But then, of course, Christ talked about, tear this temple down and I will rebuild it in 3 days. And they said, it took us, 40 years or whatever to build this temple. Are you going to build it in 3 days? Yes. He was talking about his body. The true temple of the Lord. And, all that stuff is fascinating. But, of course, that issue is, what was in Solomon's heart? And, because you look at that, because these things are set as examples for us. We see that in, Paul says that in where Colossians? Anyway, wherever it is. So I'm wondering, my attitude when I said, Lord, would you grant me the 10K? Because I have purpose, I have desires for Shepherd Nexus. And, there's what you might call the cedar part, or the bricks and whatnot, the technology, the object model, the Matryoshka protocol, and whatnot. That's the stuff. But that's not the goal. I'm fast. It's kind of like a good work of art done with cedar, with gold, with stone. And you can do some things that are magnificent, wonderful to the eye. And I would suggest the object model in Shofar Nexus is wonderful to the eye for those who have the eye to behold that kind of thing, which I know the Lord does. So, yes, there's that kind of beauty, but that's not the purpose of Shofar Nexus. Which brings, obviously, up the idea of Ukraine, of course. Because one of the things I heard today, I've heard in the last several days, apparent, because obviously there's a whole lot of distortion of, people are dying like crazy, the Russians are dying like crazy, they're losing and whatnot. They're not at all. Russians are walking away with this. And apparently, it seems that the most credible information that I'm finding, it's roughly a 10-to-1 ratio on deaths. 10 Ukrainians or Ukrainians and foreign fighters that are fighting for Ukraine compared to one Russian. They're losing massively. And, there's, all the news is about we're sending more tanks and whatnot and so forth. And we're going to send, several dozen more tanks and they get blown out of they've lost so many, it's ridiculous. And you're going to send a few more? It's kind of like, it's marketing. And what is it for? In order to put more money in? Because who's making all the money right now? the military-industrial complex. I mean, they're making money hand over fist. It's COVID made the pharmaceutical industry a whole lot of money. Ukraine is making the military manufacturers and whatnot a whole lot of money. It's all about money. I mean, that's the driving force. But the I'm hearing reasonable suggestions from a variety of sources that there's a lot of we're gonna make some big strong advances, especially coming spring and whatnot. And it seems that reasonable possibility by spring this will be over, basically over. Ukraine will have lost. They will be very crushed, and how it becomes messy. And there has to be, and I think that's why we have the saber rattling, in China and so forth. That's why there's so much focus on Africa right now, I think, because we want to deflect. So when we lose, like we lost in Syria, like we lost in Iraq, we basically lost in Libya. We lost in the sense we destroyed it and gained nothing. And so forth. We're not going to win against Iran. We lost in Afghanistan. That was rather embarrassing, wasn't it? And so we'll do that in Ukraine. So we have to move the focus somewhere else. So we don't talk about Afghanistan. We talk about Ukraine. In the same way, we'll talk about something else. And, that was yesterday. We don't talk about that anymore. But my concern is, as I've mentioned, the generational hatred idea. There's a whole bunch of people there. Forget the politics. There are a whole bunch of people there. And a lot of these people are Russian culturally or Ukrainian culturally. And some of these are, families. And some of those families are mixed race. And, especially it's, because I have my own family. There's the tension in the United States between white and black. Well, I have a grandson and a granddaughter who are basically one quarter black. And so what that does is it gives us a mixture of white and black within a family. But now the white and black relationships, beyond that, there's tension. And how do you reduce that? How do you reconcile these things? Same thing, apply that to Ukraine. A Russian culturally and a Ukrainian culturally, there's perhaps a marriage. But then their friends and extended family, and is there tension? Is that generational hatred there? And how do you resolve that? Forget the bombs and whatnot. How do you reconcile relationships? What did Christ come into the world for? Reconciliation. I can't handle that. But just like someone going to provide the cup of water, I know how to provide some tools to open doors of communications, the back channels, to help some. It's not, a glass of water helps basically anybody who's thirsty. What I do helps a small fraction. But it's for that small fraction I want to help them. And, that's reconciliation effort. Part of the effort behind protecting the whistleblower, I got specific when I talked about slavery, especially the sex slave, because that protection of the whistleblower is the exact same technology to protect the sex slave, which is the exact same technology that can be used to reconcile people. It is the example I use. If somebody in leadership at Meadowview or Covenant Presbyterian says, yes, you made the case. In obedience to Christ, I want to reconcile with you. But I don't have whatever, so much stuff around me, a family, whatnot. I cannot destroy that just to reconcile with you. But I'll do it privately. So I'm putting the tools in place to open that door. Why not do the same for someone Russian in Ukraine with Ukrainian in Ukraine to have the same tools to reconcile. That's where my heart is. It's not the object model of Shofar Nexus. It's to provide the tools to reconcile. It's to provide the tools, again, for that guy, Abdullah, saying, oh, praise Allah, and I am wonderful that I'm doing the Hajj, and I've walked around the Kaaba, and I've gone to the place where I take the stones and throw stones at the devil, or at Satan, or whatever it is. I've done all that stuff, and whoa, I'm fantastic, and now you show me, oh, I was following a fallacy. It's not the prophet Jesus. It's the Lord Jesus Christ, my creator, my redeemer. And I found this out because in the privacy in a back room somewhere, I had an electronic Bible that did not broadcast anywhere, and I could read this thing privately. And then the Lord, not me, the Lord grabbed this person's heart and said, you're mine. And perhaps shortly thereafter, he's at one of the Friday beheadings, because that's illegal in Saudi Arabia. But to go to your death as a follower of Muhammad, or go to your death, maybe even younger, as a follower of Christ, yeah, it's worth it. It's definitely worth it. And that's what I want to do. So something came up today. I have this eating habit, and there have been difficulties. I've been proposed many ways with many people. Here's ways to make money off of Shofar Nexus. The communications aspect and the distributed storage. Both cases, the objective in my mind is to develop the ecosystem. I need others to do that, and I need some financial resources. But I want to do it so it's not like my dealing with Ray Kassar, where he's basically buying me, the guy Atari. But I want to do it so I'm not bought. And then my focus is the reconciliation in Ukraine, the reconciliation with people at MetaView, for example. Abdullah reading the Bible. That sex slave down the street. That's where my focus is. A decision is now at hand. Because negotiations have started. I would rather stay with my economic trials. I don't want a car. I want to pay my rent. I want to eat. I like a new computer because I'm really concerned about. But anyway. But I don't need plushness. A new set of boots would be nice, but I don't need a car. I don't need a fancier place. I need to survive. And otherwise, I'm survive quite cheap. You know, I do say I work my 40-hour workday. I'm fine. I can do that for probably a few more years. But I need to be able to eat. I don't have the resources or the allies yet. But maybe what we might say is the another version of Ray Kassar at the table. And again, this time we're back to the deep pockets. But instead of building the ecosystem, I want to buy the whole thing. So a decision has to be made. Can I raise enough funds to survive long enough to build it till it becomes self-sustaining? Or do I have to sell out? I can make a whole lot of money right now by selling out. I can get a fancy car. I don't have to rent a place. I can go buy a nice place in the country with that. I don't want to. Some people understand the potential marketplace, and now they see it. If that were to transpire, it's a reasonable likelihood the Shofar Leaks project and the Shofar Books project comes to a grinding halt. If I don't have funds to eat and pay rent, comes to a grinding halt. If I have this huge wad of cash put in my lap, again, it comes to a grinding halt. I don't want either of those. I want enough to survive. My guess is as early as tomorrow, maybe by sometime next week, I'll have my answer. Because I'm abandoned, because I have no idea about my kids, because I have no idea about the woman I love and adore, I can make some fairly hard decisions. If tomorrow or in the next few days, the option comes, especially if it both came to the table, here's enough money for you to survive for another few months. And just barely, like I'm doing now. Or here's a wad of cash where we can make some serious money. I mean, we're talking, you want to be a millionaire? Here it is. I don't want it. I wonder if my wife does. I don't want it. I want to go to my grave. Trying all the days of all the remaining days of my life to be a blessing to people seeking reconciliation, be a blessing to people trying to know our Creator. I have no passion for the world anymore. None whatsoever. I like to take a hike. But that's to see God's creation, not man's. It looks like maybe the time has come. I don't know how much time it'll be till I have an answer on this. The example of David in 2 Samuel 7. He didn't build the house for the ark. Yeah, because you got to remember, the Ark of the Covenant was put into the temple with Solomon, the big celebration, whatnots, never heard from again. Never heard from them again. Anyway, which is fascinating. But because it really, I think reason being is because it's an idol. The temple is an idol. The Lord in his tent is who we worship. And I want to celebrate with others who worship that way. Anyway, it's been difficult. It's been a long. Things may change radically as early as tomorrow. It may be next week. I don't know how long it'll drag on. But it's at hand, it appears. And if I have the choice is easy. I don't want to do it alone. My lady, this is your husband. I love you and I want you back.